Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy! I heard Biden was a loser. I mean, look, Joe never got more than 1%.
And now, your hosts.
Singing very well to the solo, but yeah, we are back. I think this is 205, right?
It is. That was definitely, for our Lethal Weapon fans out there, is it three and then go? It was definitely one of those moments.
Yeah, sorry. I, you know, our new intro is throwing me off a little bit because
I like it.
What does she say? She says something, and now you're hosts. And I found that if I set the record up at
you
the
wanted
end,
that plural.
I did. However, if I set the beginning, like for us to start recording at the end of that wavelength, then it's about this weird, odd, like 10-second pause where she's like, and now your hosts. And then it's just kind of this dying out solo. So every time I hit record, I hear that solo and it takes me to the olden days of Pink Floyd. And
before the wars, when the world was new, those were the golden years. But now we return from our dual absconding to this.
All right. Well,
to this.
Cut to the chase here. So this is, I am afraid. It's not that I'm afraid. It appears as though, I remember when we first started this podcast, so much of our time was consumed by the Russia investigation or the collusion investigation, whatever you want to call it. And I'm afraid that it'll be very hard.
Witch hunts.
Yeah, the witch hunts. That I'm afraid that it'll be very hard to not cover this in a way. This will be so dominating until it's not. It's like debt. It's great. Until
what, impeachment?
It's, yeah.
Well, there's no way to not discuss this and to be a political moment.
Yeah,
and what's more, I don't want to get around it.
There's no way to not discuss this. There's nothing else that's more important right now. And again, you know, it's like debt. It's great until it's not. This will be hot until it literally is not. And who knows how long that will take. So, let's try to make some segues here. So, for our international followers, listeners, savants, if you will, citizens of the world. Currently, right now, the president of the United States, if you haven't listened to the last podcast episode, is embroiled in a formal impeachment inquiry, which means they are going to look into the evidence and then present it to our legislatures, basically our congressmen, congresswomen, and senators, and essentially, potentially, take the president to trial in the Senate and possibly impeach him or acquit him. Everyone is fairly aware of the Clinton impeachment, where he was acquitted in the Senate, but it was the House that voted to move forward with it. So sort of like lower chamber, upper chamber. I don't know how you make that correlation, but it does not mean that the House or our Congress has effectively had a vote. It is going into inquiry. And so right now, a lot of what you hear are the subpoenas. No, they're subpoenaing the State Department. They've subpoenaed the White House for documents. They've subpoenaed, I think, Giuliani at this point. They had some testimony.
They've subpoenaed State. I mean, they've subpoenaed. I mean, everybody but you and I, just about.
Yeah. And there's a lot of grumbling. Pompeo said that he would not let. That's the Secretary of State said that he would not let some of the State Department members testify because the Democrats were being bullies. I think at the end of the day, Giuliani, Pompeo, and the White House have until October 18th to give the subpoena documents forward, which leaves a lot of people questioning because there have been some deadlines so far, and they just don't turn in. I always have to laugh at the difference between like having a good lawyer and someone like me. So I would have to say, it would be an interesting world that I would live in if I got subpoenaed. And I was like, nah, I'm probably just not going to do that. So, because I will say the caveat is the Congress, the Senate, so the House, however you want to say, they do have the power to enforce subpoenas, so obstruction of justice, use it.
There's a structural problem here with the mechanism, in the sense that we saw during, not that these are equivalent, these are parallel situations, okay, by any means, but we saw during Fast and Furious, not the films, all 11 of them, folks, but rather the alleged...
Oh, the DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency.
Yes, but we saw with that, and then we saw with Benghazi as well, people not only declining subpoenas, but folks that received contempt of Congress. They were, you're going to be in contempt of court. They were in contempt of Congress via formal vote, and there was no punishment.
No.
So it's meaningless. It's like being labeled menace to society. You don't like the label, but it's
a weird place to be because it ultimately doesn't give Congress much authority, or their authority seems pretty nullified. However,
it's very muted. At the end of the day, people are going to agree or disagree based on where they lie in partisan terms, by and large.
Now, there's some other things that I am aware of that in terms of the executive branch being able to order or be able to call executive privilege, which means that some of the president's conversations aren't brought forward.
It actually covers quite a lot.
Which it does. And this is where a lot of people start asking the question, so what – I made this analogy precast, and maybe this is the best time to do it, right? Maybe this isn't. I won't put that analogy in. I'll hold off on that right now. But I think what people are buying into is the interpretation of law at such unprecedented or such high levels of government, that there's so many cases, very very standard cases that happen. I guess you would say in normal civil society, that we're like, we have a lot of precedent for this. We have a lot of sentencing history with this. We pretty much know what to do, what to expect. But at these high levels of government, with things like executive privilege and so on and so forth, it becomes, I think, the laws and the interpretation of the laws and what the founding fathers originally intended becomes a pretty tricky thing to navigate and open to interpretation, where one side can say this is definitively a obstruction of justice, or this is definitively a high crimes and misdemeanors for using your political office for gain, or this is clearly,
which is not what the transcripts have shown. By the way,
so regardless of what they show, then there's the other
side.
They
haven't shown him using his office for personal gain.
Well, they can't, I mean, they can't prove that he did. Based on
again, he does have the presumption of innocence here.
That's true. Now, but that's,
we may not like Donald Trump, okay? But let's in the interest of fairness here,
and that's what the inquiry is for, right? I mean, we don't actually have the real.
You and I both know this for the Democrats, writ large, by large, as a body politic, is not an inquiry.
Okay,
this is delivering on the campaign promise to impeach the MFR. Yes,
all right, but let's. Let me back you up a little bit. Well, this wasn't an inquiry by this wasn't an inquiry by Democrats from the beginning, going, "Hey, we want to see every transcript from leaders."
You've got a freshman congresswoman saying we're going to impeach the MFR.
Yes,
that doesn't make this an inquiry.
So hold on, you've got these people that said we want to impeach him. All right, but this didn't start from, as far as we know, because this is a little conspiratorial. This didn't start from the squad wanting to impeach him. This started from a career federal operator who formally who's put forth a formal whistleblower complaint. So that's where it started from. This wasn't.
Do you genuinely believe that?
That's where it all started. Yes.
No, I mean, so you believe that.
I mean, what's not to believe? There's a formal whistleblower.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Continue. I just want to be clear. You believe this whole? Yeah. Okay.
No. There was a there is absolutely a desire to impeach him. However, yes, I'm not denying that there is a desire to impeach him, and they failed with the special prosecutor.
Catalyst.
However, what I'm trying to say is this moved. It isn't as though this landed in their lap. No one went forward trying to get this, or no one was investigating this. This was a seasoned operator that was detailed to the White House and was like, I've been doing this for a while, and that seems stinky. And Volker as well, a Pompeo guy in Ukraine, who is the ambassador at the time in Ukraine, a State Department's individual, was like, heard that phone call and knew what was going on, and also was like, this is kind of like, this is shady. And so all this stuff landed in the Democrats' lap. And if they're impeachment happy, hell yeah, they're going for it. What I'm saying is that there seems to be some fairly neutral operators within the federal government that were like, this kind of stinks. And so that was the catalyst to the impeachment inquiry. It doesn't matter whether or not they wanted to or not. I think if this information came down, there would be enough.
So it wouldn't matter to you if we're heading into it. It wouldn't matter to you if your client or you or your family was heading into a trial by a jury of their peers and at least 8 of those 12 want them convicted regardless? That wouldn't matter to you.
Well, we're talking 8 of 12. We're talking 5 of 400 plus.
All right. So right. 3 of 12.
Yeah. Statistics.
Wouldn't find that unsettling?
It would be unsettling. But that's also, this is the difference between that Court of Justice. Look, due process is still there. And that's what the inquiry is. Well, yeah. Okay.
In reality, there is no difference. Yeah. The difference is it's being played out by the state for the American people to see. But I want you to continue. But there are several problems I have with this that have nothing to do with Donald John Trump, the current executive office holder.
And I'm not we haven't even talked about him, and I think that's what's so interesting about this is we can talk about him at the end, because regardless of whether or not you think there's problems with this or there's not problems with this or it's cut and dry, the president's probably not handling this the best way, but we'll save that for later.
That's
a whole different thing.
I wouldn't have had these conversations on record, period.
Period.
I mean, I don't know about you. Let's forget for a moment that President Nixon is my American political hero. Okay, let's forget that for a second. Remove me from this equation. I would have learned something since he's referenced Nixon in the past. I learned something from history. I don't know if it's mere ignorance or if it was arrogance.
It's arrogance. You know? To me, it's arrogance. It's speculation.
And I can see why one might.
Because John, here's why it's arrogance. Because he turns around, he puts a middle finger to everyone that's like, this seems shady, and then calls on China to do the same thing. He's like, we're just ferreting out corruption, bro. So he gets caught with his pants around his ankles with Ukraine and trying to cover up that it isn't what it looks like. And he goes, no, we're fighting corruption. I can ask anybody to help fight corruption. And then he turns to China and he's like, yeah, how about them? Have them help too. And that's where you start getting the Susan Collins of the world, a couple of these other senators that are coming out, and they're like, that's yikes. That's communist Russia. Like, that's arrogance. That's buffoonery. Like, I don't even know what word to use.
It could be. It could be so argued. Okay, and again, folks are probably going, wait a minute, what? But the least of my focus here is actually Donald John Trump, aside from the fact that at least a fourth of the House was determined to get rid of beforehand. But that's okay. Besides the point.
So look, we can pivot. We can pivot away.
I want to pause at this.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I would say
we can pivot away from the president, because the president's doing enough, for international listeners, it's not.
I just find this to be the height of hypocrisy, I suppose, going forward. Duplicitousness is perhaps a better word. It is very duplicitous to me. I don't care if they're Green Party, Democratic Party, Republican Party, or Pants Party, whatever. It is very duplicitous, two-faced, whatever you want to call it, for people who, as long as it's going on behind closed doors, we don't care. But the fact that it's out in the open, he's calling, because nobody... nobody except, I guess, his supporters had a problem with the fact that Christopher Steele, who last I checked, yes, is from the UK. This is where this whole Mueller, the dossier, everything started from. So it was okay for the opposition party, in this case the Democrats, to use foreign intelligence to smear a political opponent. But when Donald John Trump decides to do it and then does it so openly, we don't like it. Well, to me, this is a, you like to use the phrase nothing burger. This is a nothing burger to me. And in fact, even makes a halfway institutional guy, as a veteran myself, want to flip them off as well, the establishment going, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it does it.
Now,
so I hear, it's okay if y'all do it.
I hear you. But if there's anything I've learned.
Does that not land? Does that not resonate?
I get it. And I certainly, it has not eluded me. However, what I've found over the last 2 years of doing this podcast with you is that there is a difference, and I'm not saying that, that politics doesn't really happen at the local civic level, state, especially the judiciary. However, there is a difference, whether we like it or not, whether it needs to change or not, there is a difference at the federal political bureaucratic level. It is a chess game. It's the house of cards. Netflix did a whole show on it. There will always be hypocrisy. And it makes me, it's gross. It is what it is. However, it's, we might as well not play whataboutisms because it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. You know, it can matter to you and I.
It's only a problem for me if I live in a glass house to the Stones.
It just doesn't matter. They can say, but I think here's the thing. Here's what really,
I don't live in a glass house. So I can throw all the stuff I want, though.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, John. I think the difference between this and what it could be without it, meaning if there was not a whistleblower, like a career operative who felt it was, there was enough sort of unethical behavior going on to file a formal complaint, and then a potential second whistleblower that's coming down the pike, that substantiates this in a different way. Now,
it substantiates that people in Washington that want him gone.
Yeah, but you don't think if there was a federal whistleblower for the Steele dossier that there might be a different sort of weight to it?
That's just it. Nobody had the character to come forward.
Well, maybe they'd. I don't know. Like, that's the thing. I just think that the whataboutisms, like what we're talking about is political sentiment. We're talking about where the wind flies in terms of public sentiment and public opinion.
What's not political sentiment. And that is my greatest concern here is where this takes us in terms of the president of the United States not being able to have privileged diplomatic cables. That's a problem for me, because what is the standard? So now every single staffer with a clipboard and a phone that they can transfer calls to, every single staffer at the State Department now has their own moral compass making the call of what the president should and shouldn't say or talk about. Look, it is not lost on me the indecorous behavior of the president here. Okay, you know this. You know I'm honest in this, and I'm saying this to our listeners. That's not the issue to me. But we have a problem when, now we're not only calling balls and strikes, but the bat boy now gets to challenge the call. You see what I'm getting at? It's like, now all 40,000, however many staffers at the Department of State, the State Department can, I don't know. We can't do this. I mean, where does this get us?
Yeah. Look, what I will say this, I think we need to also take a deep breath there in terms of 40,000 staffers, that whistleblowing in the federal government is a career ender. You're done. That's the way it is. So I don't think, regardless of whether or not you had 40,000 people listening into the phone call, or like
that's not what I meant.
But I know what you're saying is we can call balls and strikes now, right? Like the analyst, will feel empowered to make a move on ethical. Yeah, that's not
secretary now that's, can say,
but that's not the way it works in the federal government. That the whistleblower currently right now will be done. That's just the way it works.
See, that's the whole point of the whistleblower.
But that's the whistleblower laws and the reality are different.
If by
the
theory, you mean firing the federal government and selling 30 million copies of their tell-all book,
he won't be.
Then sure,
that person, he or she, will not be. They won't be fired, because that is a clear equal opportunity or whatever. It falls under, I'm sure, something. But they will never have the same details. They'll never have the same operations. They'll never have the same responsibility ever. So it is a career ender, effectively, which is why you probably don't see more. You mean to tell me that there's not a whole mess load of shit that could be whistleblowed in the federal government? It just doesn't happen, because the way it is a career ender. And at this height, and this person had to weigh that, right? This person detailed to the White House is not going to take too long for anyone to figure out who did it. Like that person's career is done. And that's a high profile. That's a high profile position to be in. If CIA, FBI, like whatever that agency is, and detailed to the White House, you're done. So I don't take it lightly. Like, there's the little details like this, like at least the federal government so like I think back to some of the stuff that we had to go through in the federal government. We had to go back in the federal government, and we're like hesitant to do it because you know the kind of fallout that's going to happen from that. So it's not.
Well, so what does this look like for you then? I mean, cutting parallel comparisons and all this and concerns over executive privilege.
There's a couple things. First off, this sets an interesting precedent for executive privilege. We don't have the full transcript of what happened. We don't.
Putting it mild.
We don't have the full transcript, so we're sort of getting this redacted, like not really redacted, but piecemealed sort of transactional relay to the Ukrainian president. But you know, this has opened the American public's eyes, and not the base, the minority base that he could summon the devil and they'd be still on board. There is another, sort of the majority of the population that's watching this all unfold and now realize that, wow, these conversations are really happening, and it had to take a whistleblower in order to call this out. Like, maybe we do need more scrutiny on this. Like, we don't know what's happening. I mean, there's enough eyes on sort of the rich, the 1%, the wealthy, the powerful, the bureaucrats, that weird, we've talked about it before, that weird cultural shift that's happening in the United States, that I think they're, anyway, that's just an interesting point from that. But where do I see it going? And it's a good segue, because I think this is the important part to talk about in the last bit of this episode. Now, what you don't hear a lot of right now are a lot of elected officials on the Republican side of the House that are rushing to the president's defense. I think it's been pretty quiet. And I think there's been a few that have popped out of the woodworks that have made their lack of appreciation for the way the president has handled this so far known, i.e. Susan Collins. There's a couple others.
Let's not forget the wise, all-knowing Senator Mitt Romney.
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever. I just don't. Maybe we'll get to that, but I don't care as much.
let's go.
So, now you don't hear a whole lot, which means there's a couple things that I'm thinking here, and I'm not the only person that has thought this. This is not like an original thought. However, there are a lot, and I mean a lot, of conservative strategists who have sort of just ruled out 2020 altogether. It's a wash. And have had their sights focused in on 2024. maybe that's because, excuse me, they truly believe that the president's going to get reelected. But even then, it's sort of a weird place to start. At this point, if the president was impeached or resigned or like whatever happened, that their sights are really on 2024. Now, if, and it could very well happen, because I think it is, the polls are starting to show that public sentiment is just, public opinion is sort of moving in favor of just getting rid of this fucking president. That's it.
I'm not going to say that that's inaccurate, but let me split a hair for you here.
That's fine.
Public sentiment has shifted to support an inquiry. public sentiment also in the same polling, though, simultaneously juxtaposed with this, has stated that they feel that the Democrats are accelerating this and going too far too quickly. And this is, again, the same nonpartisan group. So, I mean, I see what you're getting at, but I wouldn't say that the American public as a body in the majority is going.
the majority of people aren't in the streets saying impeach him like they were in Puerto Rico when all that stuff came out about the governor.
I think they remember what the country, a lot of people were around for Clinton, and some a good portion of this country was around for both Clinton and Nixon, and realized what that means for the country.
Yeah.
There are patriots, believe it or not, folks, that exist in America.
But I think...
Here's the difference.
Here's the difference between Clinton and Reagan, or excuse me, Clinton and Nixon. For the most part,
there's quite a few, but continue.
For the most part, they were
president.
Yeah, they're arguably you could find a lot of good for both presidents, right?
You're right.
There wasn't anything other than the scandal itself that was really the average person could point to and be like, yeah, that guy X, Y, and Z, where anybody, regardless of whether you would go to, you would take a bullet for him if he summoned the devil and you're evangelical, everyone can go, yeah, he's an asshole. And some people like him for it. And some people don't like him for it. So it just won't, once the dominoes start falling, like it could be a piece of information, it could be the narrative, it could be anything, that you could see the dominoes fall, and it could be that the American public finally just a little overwhelmingly or not just says, just get rid of them, let's just reset, like this is ridiculous, we're done with this.
There's only one way to get rid of the bad, I'll get rid of the source, basically.
Yeah. Now, if that happens, I don't feel like it would take too much for Senate Republicans to just wash their hands of this, just distance themselves. Like I feel like it wouldn't take a whole lot, or just be some tantrum by the president or something that comes out. I don't know what that would be necessarily, where you as in a fairly Republican state, like you're not at risk of reelection issues, that you could just be like, oh, just get rid of this guy. This is not the conservative party. I went to bat for you for so many things, and this is just ridiculous. I think we're done.
It certainly is a where to now moment, St. Peter, for the GOP now, specifically, because he changed things.
I should preface this real quick. They would need to do that in light of evidence that they could convict him of high crimes or misdemeanors, which is fairly open to interpretation anyway.
Which is completely undefined. And I think the frustration that we find here was deliberate by the founders. It was deliberately put in place because they didn't want there to be few barriers for something as serious as impeachment and removal of office. It's supposed to be a strenuous, difficult, thorough process. So whether or not, I mean, we don't know what's in the second whistleblower report, but we do know this, regardless of what one thinks of him, Senate Majority Leader, Republican from Kentucky, Senator Mitch McConnell, is, unless you want to correct me, not in the House, but in the Senate, the finest tactician there is. That's why he's where he is.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I'll give you that. Moscow
he
Mitch.
Went from, yeah, it was, sure. As we said precast, he went from being in the 80s pro Ayn Rand, founder of Atlas Shrugged, Reaganomics Republican, to in the 90s part of the New Contract with America, which, yes, actually Reagan, that was an extension of Nixon Republican ideals by Newt Gingrich. There's a vast gulf between Nixon and Reagan. But then you fast forward to now, Mitch McConnell is a pragmatist, okay? And the issue is going to be, what does this look like for us as a party as a whole going forward, okay, regardless of whether or not they want to be seen as taking a defeat from the Democrats here, the reality is this, that if it starts to look like, all right, we might lose the whole thing, and I mean all three branches of government, and I think people like Mitch McConnell are going to want to be ahead of the curve on that, and that's where you might see not so much the Senate turning on him, the Senate Republicans saying, hey, all right, let's vote. It's 86 to 12 with one sick, one recusing themselves. And I don't see that so much as I see Senator Mitch McConnell and company maybe taking a nice little trip. Other senators and representatives possibly with whom the president gets along, taking a trip down to Pennsylvania Avenue and saying, hey, look, Donald, make resignation your idea. Okay, because in the long run, look, we don't want to get bogged down in the weeds, especially this late here in economics. But public sentiment is going to be a major factor, regardless of whether I think this whole thing is, well, it's nuts. Whether I think it's fair or not, I think it is highly just disgusting all around. The duplicitousness and hypocrisy on one, well, actually on all sides, you know, it's an outrage that we're even here, frankly, but public sentiment, economics, that's going to become very much the same thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's where this could get really interesting is let's say, I mean, we've seen trillions of dollars peeled off the Chinese economy because of this. I don't agree with tariffs as a laissez-faire economic thinker, but to a certain degree, I can applaud the president for going that route because, hey, everybody from Carter through Obama campaigned on standing up to China. Only one's done it. So yeah. With that, if, big F here, but let's say China does come around, we have a deal, then a lot of the barriers, and you said this precast, a lot of the things that have contributed to the potential of a recession, the decline in manufacturing numbers, the slowing of jobs being added, you know, the inversion of the yield curve, there's a lot of things that look like, well, all of a sudden, we've got to deal with China. The UCMCA is on the board, signed into law. I mean, do you think that there's a shift there then?
Well, here's the thing.
Is there a pendulum effect, or is the president's personality going to get in the way of his own success here?
Here's why I don't think it does anything. Because jobs reports came out. Unemployment's the lowest it's been in 50 years. The consumer,
consumer spending hasn't ebbed.
It hasn't ebbed at all. So
no,
All the American people will know whether the trade deal was up or not is that the president is still the president, that he's still operating the same way. The win is only theoretical. It is only in the ether. It's not tangible.
Agricultural producers will know.
Listen, the big small business owners, manufacturers, the corporate elite, like whatever, they're listen. All those business owners already know how they're going to vote, regardless. So it's the average American, and if unemployment's low, and they're still putting money in their bank account, they're still paying their mortgage, and they're happy, and they're watching Netflix at the end of the night. They don't care whether the trade war ended or not. It's just a theory.
Right. I get that. What I'm positing to you is, say, in a purplish dynamic in areas, places like Iowa, say, this does go the president's way in terms of the trade war, the UCMCA. All of a sudden, American dairy has access to the Canadian market for the first time in eons. Mexican minimum wage goes up to $15 an hour, thereby reducing a lot of the need for illegal immigration to the U.S. across the board. You don't think any of those purple farmers are going to perhaps – I'm asking.
I've been wrong. Like, a lot of people –
We've all been wrong.
I think a lot of people run on emotion. I think a lot, like, what you have to assume that when the dairy market opens up in Canada, et cetera, the dominoes fall, that all of a sudden the farmers are like, yeah, man, like, I forgive you for the last 2 years of hardship and potential bankruptcy, et cetera. Like you really kicked those Chinese asses, you know, like you have to assume that the immediacy of increased revenues and decreased trade restrictions, for whatever reason, they just forgive the president and they're like, thank you. You did a good job, man. We knew all along. Like, no, probably there's going to be a handful of them that are like, screw you, dude. Like, I was the one. Everyone, the complete consumer economy were adding more TVs in their houses. They didn't feel the pinch demand. Like, we didn't change pricing. And even if the pricing had changed, it still probably wouldn't have decreased demand that much because people are putting money in their pocket. Wages are at or above inflation level. Like, everyone's happy. And so you've got this group, you've got this.
A real sign job numbers are real is the people that have ghosted from the first day of work. That's the latest trend.
That's the latest trend. But anyway, I guess that's what my point is. Like, the American economy, whether or not it's the yield reversal or whatever the deal is, like, all these signs are pointing to it, but until the consumer feels it, we're 60%, I think our GDP is 63% consumables, right? It's a consumer economy. Until the consumer feels it, will the effect of the trade war ending, if it did in the next 6 months, really have a net benefit to Trump? That's just how I feel.
You're right. It's a point taken. It'd be a less than 0.1% gain. Yeah, I would stipulate.
It's like I say, the people that are really affected right now. I think your farmers. I think your small business owners. Like, they're already going to vote away. Like, they're long term thinkers, but. They're long-term thinkers that probably could hold a grudge if they're like, man, I was the only, like, it was me. I was the only one that got affected by this. Like, screw you, bro. Like, thank you, I guess. Like, way for me to be altruistic and utilitarian for the greater good, you know?
It's good for them. On the third of the country of the voting populace that's going to support him regardless, I know you and I talked about this. I don't know if I mentioned it in the last episode. If I did, folks, I apologize for repeating myself. But the head of Liberty University, which is, yes, an evangelical Christian establishment. Yeah, this ends badly.
Dude.
Jerry Falwell Jr., the namesake of who I believe was a sincere man, regardless of this. Yeah, Jerry Falwell Sr. I think he was a good guy.
You're gonna take this out. I'm not gonna say a word on this because I have nothing good to say.
You already know. Well, so Jerry Falwell Jr., like I said, namesake of his father, who I believe was a man of integrity, but he's the head of Liberty University now, and he was asked point blank, "Is there anything that you can imagine that Donald John Trump could do?"
Murder, rape,
to remove, like, anything
for
you to anything. The word "any." Is there any thing, action, course of action the president could take that would cause you to remove your support from him? And there was a pause. I'll give Jerry Falwell Jr. this. He took longer than a lot of people have. Okay, a lot of people answer no immediately, but after a pause and clear contemplation, he replied, "No."
Because he had to think of all of the most horrible things.
He spits on a crucifix?
Dude.
That's not going to matter to you publicly?
He had to think of all the most horrible crap in his head that he could think of. And he had to decide. Hold on. He had to decide, is that something the president could actually, like, he could spit on a cross. Yeah. Yeah, Jerry. He could. He would. Why would he care? Playboy Mansion doing a whole load of coke in the 80s and some video surfaces him spitting on a cross. Like, the guy doesn't care. So he had to pause and think about all of the...
Well, yeah, because his daddy is who Ted Bundy spent his last night with, meaning Jerry Falwell's junior's father.
Jerry Falwell kicking people out of Liberty University for touching when they dance. Meanwhile, he's down in Miami blowing coke and hooking up with strippers. Good old evangelical hypocrisy, baby. Gotta love, like, the patriarchy.
Like Stevens once asked, would Jesus wear a Rolex on his television show? Yeah, but it's the reality of where we're at is, regardless of, for our listeners out there, I am, by the way, a Christian. I'm Roman Catholic in denomination. So this is an anti-Christian discussion here, but it's very clear. There's nothing he could do. That tells me all I need to know right there about the one third. What he's betting on, what Donald John Trump, president of the United States, is betting on. This is my personal synopsis here. Synopses, if that's a word, plural. He's betting UCMCA will go through because public sentiment is in favor of saying, hey, y'all need to put this on the House floor. Even Democrats are saying that. It's going to go through. Whatever. The trade deal will happen before the election. And he's betting that the ghost pulling, which, as we've discussed numerous times on the show, was quite prominent. People didn't want to say in public, yes, I'm supporting Trump over Clinton. Well, that's he comes and performs 4 to 7% better in a lot of those areas he's supposedly losing, like namely the Rust Belt, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, etc. He's betting that that's going to include a lot of the never Trumpers this time around who are going to come out. And my answer to that query is that depends on who the Democrats nominate. But
100%.
Regardless, that what he's betting on is that those folks, which I agree, there will be people like my older brother who didn't vote last time out, that this time around they see this as a cultural war. They see this as a cultural civil war. And that's the reality. Mm-hmm. They're coming out for him. Now, is that going to be enough? The president thinks it is, and that's where I'll leave that one.
Yep. We'll leave that for future episodes.
And God knows, folks, I mean, of course, you're here, so you know this, and you're obviously willing because you're able and here, but this impeachment is going to be a recurring topic here. Get ready. Short of President Trump not seeking re-election,
just
this is where we're going to be.
Now, did we not call this, before we wrap this up, did we not go, the Mueller investigation is done. We're done. We can talk about policy, and we can talk about, what are we going to do with ourselves? I feel like the entire podcast has been defined by these singular events. Leave it 6 months, baby. Get through the summer into early fall, and it just barely happens again.
We barely got there. It's like, you know, that just got done being grounded, and then he causes this. You know, I will. It's like, dude, you couldn't wait to flip off the establishment after the month. He was waiting.
Poking the tiger, baby. That's
the thing here, okay? Yeah, to wrap up with is we knew this day was coming, but it's like I'm wondering if all along the idea is not – I don't know. I just keep feeling like does this man even want to be president anymore? I mean, I know he allegedly didn't to begin with. No, and he even said in one of the leaked transcripts, you know, from the Mueller investigation that this is going to be a hell of a promo for Trump properties. That's not made up, folks. I've got that cited on the site. But I've long, at what point is he going to go, you know what? I've got a few good years left that I can make new deals, the best deals, the greatest deals, with people that, you know, really love me, all 16 of them, you know. Walk away.
So before we wrap up, what's your gut feeling? Do you think this guy actually, do you think this guy's staring down the barrel of 2020 and is like, I'm more committed than ever? Or is he like, how could I gracefully just get off this?
Out of ego? I think ego definitely wants to be back. But I'll tell you this, he's staring down the barrel of a very uncomfortable series of conversations with Mitch McConnell. Hmm. One way or the other. Bye.
Yep. Well, hey. We're at about 45 minutes, as always. Of course, we would like naturally went 15 minutes over than we wanted to, but there's so much to set the stage for future.
We'll have to reconvene.
But yeah, absolutely. As always, for our listeners out there, thank you for tuning in and day out. It's what drives us to get on here at least once a week and talk about this stuff.
Y'all are worth it.
If you like what you hear and you like to read, head over to modstate.com for more opinion pieces. And as always, if you have anything that you would like to add, we can read on the air, etc., just send us an email over at modstate, M-O-D-S-T-A-T-E, at modstate.com, and we'll get back to you as quickly as we can. And I think, where is it? My Outlook popped back up, and I was trying to remember what my email was, and I could throw that on there.
Yours is nwellein@modstate.com, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. So that is nwellein@modstate.com. So if you feel like you don't,
the German.
If you feel like John's fielding those modstate@modstate.com emails, and you don't want to talk to him, and you would like to swing one my way, again, that's nwellein@modstate.com.
I need to make my own because that looks very that looks very, I don't know, snobby that I'm using the mod state of mod suit. When it's just, it's folks, it's a general email. We both see it. I'll forward stuff to Nate. If you want in, whatever, we'll figure it out. But y'all are worth it. And thanks, Nate, for again putting up my latency here.
It's all my
network's not been great, and I've probably cut in on your time more than normal.
So, as always, my friend, until next time,
au revoir.
We'll see.